Welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Show, brought to you by Bitbox, Stampseed, the Bitcoin Advisor, and ShopinBit. Go to bitcoininfinity.com for books, merch, and more. Enjoy the conversation.
Ben, welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Show. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, this is where we first met in Riga 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's wild. Time flies.
Yeah, and both our lives took a turn.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing what can happen in a seemingly short period of time. Everything is markedly different, on both ends.
Yeah, but I mean, I can't believe how you do what you do. Like you do like the double amount of conferences that I do,
and maybe a little too many. I think I need to slow myself down a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, but you've been traveling around a lot, like with the family as well?
Yeah, we try to strike a balance. Sometimes I go solo, sometimes it's the full family, sometimes it's me and the missus. It really depends, but a little bit of both all through the year.
And how's it been? Like, well, what's your it's a pretty big question, but
yeah. I mean the travel aspect of it is fantastic. I love seeing all these places, and it's kind of cool, to be honest, seeing all the Bitcoiners just in different parts of the globe all through the year. It's like every time it's a quasi family reunion, right?
In
cool locations.
Oh, who was that called us a traveling circus? Joe.
It's Joe.
Ho.
Yeah. That's, I mean, accurate. As Baze, I was just, we were just saying outside that we should just collectively, you know, just buy a jet, put all the necessary stuff in it, and just hop around the globe and host a bunch of events, and then just, you know, get it all done in a couple of months and then go rest.
It's not a bad strategy.
No. It's a low time preference strategy.
Are we going to start a geyser fund for the jet?
Yeah. Private jet wanted. Like,
yeah.
If anything, it would be a good meme anyway, right? A nice joke.
Yeah. I feel like I'm going to put that up now. And how many Bitcoin do you think we need for a jet?
That's a good question.
1,000,000 sats.
Yeah, well, it'll take a while to gather the funds. So we'll call that a jet lag.
Yeah. Nice. You know, guys, I all enjoy seeing the exorbitant amount of Bitcoin required and then, like, you know, 5,000 sats raised so far. Kind of.
Yeah, and then 5 years later, 5,000 sats is enough for a jet.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. So can you give us a little bit of your story, how this all started? How did you get into Bitcoin, and how did you become, because you're not actually Mr. Sessions, but you are.
Yes.
You get confused for that all the time,
yeah,
right?
So prior to Bitcoin, I actually, I taught kids how to break dance for years.
Not Australian ladies.
No. I was basically doing in-school residencies, so like in phys ed, instead of the phys ed teacher, you know, helming the dance unit, I would come in as a novelty and, you know, teach the kids a routine over the course of a week, and then they'd perform at the end of the week. And so it was a fun job, but it didn't particularly pay the bills, so I needed a side hustle, and that side hustle for a while was I went on a bunch of tech blogs, and I just kind of learned how to tear apart a MacBook and like swap out the hard drive and the RAM and things like that. And then, so I would flip MacBooks because everybody wanted a MacBook, but you could get it used. And so I would upgrade it and then sell it and earn a few $100 in an afternoon. And that felt pretty decent. But because I was like, the side note here is because I was on those tech blogs, the Bitcoin articles would be in front of me from time to time. And so it took about a year of saying, ah, crap, I missed the boat, over and over and over again, to finally say, maybe I should actually read into this and figure out what it was. And I spent the better part of 2 years trying to learn how to use it and searching desperately for video tutorials because I'm a very visual learner and not finding a single thing. It was always like, oh, go to this blog and or go to this forum, and halfway down in the comments, some dude described in point form how to do this. And I was like, I can't learn like this, but I had to. And so the channel was more like a response to the itch I couldn't scratch for myself. And I figured if I wanted that, somebody might find Bitcoin tutorials useful. And that was 8 years ago. And so now, yeah, eight years worth of doing tutorials.
So do you have any other like educational background, like just studies or anything like that?
No. This was just like, it was I think the skills that kind of came together were, even though I was teaching dance, like teaching a concept that can be complex to like a school kid, it, as long as you can break it down in a simple manner, like I had to get used to sometimes 5-year-olds trying to learn and memorize a routine with very foreign movements to them. And so regardless of subject matter, it translates if you can break something down. And so, and then the tech aspect of it, like I was not technical whatsoever before get other than like, I mean, I tore apart MacBooks, but like if you can, you know, put in a Nintendo cartridge, that's like the skill set that you need to do that. And so that was just like trial and error, and you know, tearing your hair out, doing it again, trying again, learning what not to do. And then just the being comfortable, like in front of a camera, I guess, over time.
So is this the stripe from tearing your hair off?
Yeah. It grew back eventually, but turned color. Yes. Yeah.
When did you realize that you're never allowed to change your hairstyle ever again?
I think the first time going to a conference and, somebody coming up and saying like, oh, I saw you from across the parking lot. And I was like, oh crap, I'm stuck with this forever. Yeah, now it's, but this is going to be the OPSEC thing. Cause when it's time to disappear, I just have to dye this back and I'm a ghost.
Yeah.
Nobody will know who I am. I'll be unrecognizable.
It's like if Knut shaves his beard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Although actually the beard hasn't even been going that long, but now you're used to it. Anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So what's changed over this 8 years? Because I mean, I imagine early days that you're teaching vastly different things from now in the space.
Yes and no. There's a lot more to teach now than there ever was. Like the early days, I was more or less confined to, you know, whatever phone app happened to be out as a wallet. There was very limited option for hardware. Like it just kind of started to pop up as I was early days. And then like Bitcoin ATMs or online exchanges, that was kind of the crop of what I could do. And now the list of things I would like to cover is growing faster than I can cover it. It's an impossible task to teach everything. And so that's a great thing because there's so much optionality out there for people. It's just really, really hard to, and I think because of that, now we're seeing a lot more people do tutorial videos, which is fantastic. Every time I see a new person throw their hat in the ring and start making video tutorials, I'm like, it's like a mini victory. Like I treated the opposite of competition because you can never have too much education. Just as everybody should have a Bitcoin podcast.
So speaking of podcasts and video tutorials, like how do you stay neutral in terms of the products? I mean, you must be getting offers from everyone here and there. Like, can you promote this for me or can you do that for me?
Yeah. So there's two aspects to it. I mean, number one, obviously, the only way that I can do this full time is to like have sponsors on the show. But the sponsors that I usually have, it's typically not them coming to me. Not to say there isn't people coming to me, but the ones that come to me typically are like Chicklin casinos and stuff like that, and saying it's a default no. But the sponsors that I tend to have, typically it's me saying, oh, I use this and it's great. And then I reach out to that entity and say, would you like to sponsor the show? But that comes with a caveat of no matter what, the whole point of the channel is to educate people how to use things. So I will be covering your competitors and teaching people how to use them as well. Yeah. So it's just, you gotta, and you gotta just be forthcoming with like the pros and cons of everything and be realistic about how things work. And yeah.
Oh, can I have that water?
Yes.
Sorry. This is a tricky thing, like, especially for consumers, like how can you trust the content you're consuming? Like, but I think like the essence of that is that, authenticity is the currency of the future.
Yes.
Whoever said that, but it's such a great, like your reputation is everything. If you're discovered to be a sellout, or if people discover you're a sellout, you lose all your sponsors too at a certain point, right?
So yeah, it's especially in Bitcoin, I feel like Bitcoiners hold each other to a higher standard than fiat world does. Bitcoiners, it's not so easy to forget somebody. Not that there you can't redeem yourself when you make a mistake, as long as you own it. I think the worst thing that you can do is just double down instead of being like, fucked up kind of thing. So, yeah.
No, exactly. And I mean, I was actually curious about this. Did you ever go to, like, when you're getting into Bitcoin, were you ever curious about some of the shitcoins and alternatives?
Oh, yeah.
There?
Like, especially early on, because there was no good resources that succinctly described the difference between Bitcoin and everything else. And so it wasn't until, and I never really, like, when I had Bitcoin and I had other things, I spent most of my time learning about Bitcoin specifically, and then, you know, I heard little things about other shit coins and, you know, but I never spent enough time I won't say I never spent enough time, but like, I never gained any conviction with any of the other ones. And to me, it was always just like, was always considered gambling if I had anything like that. And so it took working at an OTC desk in 2017, like a physical walk in with cash and buy Bitcoin or shitcoins, to open my eyes to just how degenerate all of that stuff was. So like my experience at the peak of the 2017 bull run was being in a room probably about double or triple the size of this. We had three desks with money counters on them, and it was shoulder to shoulder people in this room, all standing with stacks of cash ready to buy whatever coin had gone up the most that day. And it was like, yeah, Ripple hit $3.50. I'd love $10,000 worth of Ripple, please. And it was just that day after day after day, and people convinced that like, oh, this is the future. This is how it's going to be. And after going through all that and seeing the ICO craze and everything, it just put such a bad taste in my mouth witnessing that. And in a way being party to it, like working and being on the other side of the desk from that, that and discussions with and working with Francis Pouliot with Bull Bitcoin, he actually poached me from that company that I was at, and it was a breath of fresh air to get somewhere and focus on Bitcoin. And so that was the formation of where I'm at now.
Yeah, in 2019, you were here with the Bull Bitcoin team, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many of you were here? Like, I can't remember.
There was a lot of us.
Like, I feel 15 like all the, or something?
Yeah, there was a
lot.
Crew. Yeah, yeah. It was like they brought all the, you know, a bunch of the devs, and like Madex was here.
Yeah.
Because he did the shirts and everything.
Yeah, Francis.
Yeah, Francis, Dave. Like, yeah, we were all out here, and it was a good time.
Well, Bitcoin is definitely the most based exchange in the world, I think. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's other great ones, but Bull Bitcoin is like...
I think there are exchanges nowadays that are on par with them, but if you take the historical perspective, there is no second best.
Yeah, well, it was such a departure for Francis to come out and be like, his announcement of what Bull Bitcoin was going to be, and to say, we are actively Bitcoin only, and the announcement... There, I remember people in the room as he announced it being like, seriously? You guys are only doing Bitcoin. You're actively choosing not to do anything else. And then it seemed like a crazy move to a number of people that watched that announcement. And it was the best thing that they could have done.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that before and after picture of Francis, you know, with his corporate suit and everything. Yeah. Before picture and the second picture, it looks like something out of Commando or something.
Yeah, rolled out of the jungle. Yeah.
No, it's great.
Yeah. No, that was a formative time for sure.
Great news, everyone. Bitcoin, the Inverse of Clown World is out now.
It's the successor to Everything Divided by 21 Million, and it's based on the last 2 years of podcasts that we've done together. So if you like the show, you're going to love the book.
Find the book on bitcoininfinitystore.com or on Amazon.
That's right. We have our own store now, bitcoininfinitystore.com. You can find not just books, but merchandise based on Everything Divided by 21 Million, The Inverse of Clown World. That's bitcoininfinitystore.com.
So check out Bitcoin, The Inverse of Clown World today and buy some other stuff while you're there too.
This show is brought to you by Bitbox, our favorite hardware wallet. It's Swiss engineered and has all the most important security features to keep your Bitcoin safe while keeping a user experience that even your grandma can use. So visit bitbox.swiss/freedom to learn more or use code freedom at checkout for 5% off. And remember, it's the Bitbox 02 Bitcoin only edition. Make sure to get that Bitcoin only firmware.
Bitbox, 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 Bitbox.
Yeah, and I mean, those were my first touch points with crypto, the 2017 run. And I mean, in the offices in Calgary, because I'm just starting my career just out of school, and I'm working at an oil and gas company, and it's like everyone's talking about Ethereum or Ripple, basically.
Yeah.
And so that was the only thing that I got off my ass and went and bought a little bit for a little while with some Ethereum.
Yeah.
And as soon as everything crashed in 2017, it's just like, yeah, I forgot about it for 4 years until things started to climb again. And so no regrets, like what ifs or anything like that. But yeah, that was the culture at the time, though, is what I'm saying. And this was all, like, I had no idea this was all going on around me, the Bitcoin community in Calgary, right? And so this is now where you're active in building the community in Calgary, right?
Yeah. So we're now kind of, you know, I've reached a point where, you know, it's great using Bitcoin as a savings mechanism and all that. But, I think it was late last year. There was some announcement in and around like exchanges basically sending out the warnings to everybody like, hey, if you coin join and then send to the exchange, we'll have to like shut your account. Like, you gotta at least add a hop and everything. And people were getting angry and almost like shooting the messenger, like, oh, like, why don't you just not comply? And well, then the business doesn't exist. So I kind of get it. But at the end of the day, I got annoyed because people were, again, shooting the messenger rather than like just trying to do something about it. And so that kind of spurred me into, you know, recognizing that the only way around that is to actively use Bitcoin peer-to-peer, right? Like not just save it. Because like if you're saving your Bitcoin and you're putting it away and everything, and then all of a sudden every on and off ramp, it just disappears overnight because of regulatory overreach. What the hell do you do? Like, yeah, you can find your peer-to-peer exchanges and stuff like that. But like, isn't it so much better if you can just know the place where you can get beef, or you know your barber, if you can just use your money for everything that you need and then also just save it? Like, isn't that a far better world than having to rely on somebody somewhere to exchange for a worse money?
Are you familiar with the Vexel?
Yes, yes.
Looks great, really promising, idea. I think. It is, yeah. We had Grafton on weeks ago, and it's great. I mean, it's most of the users are in Prague at the moment, but still, if we can get that going, it's like, I view it as Vexel is to local Bitcoins what BTC Pay Server is to BitPay. You're taking these centralized models and you're making them peer-to-peer and more decentralized.
It's needed. Whatever I really like the idea of what Vexel's doing. Again, like it's thin in my area for people listing stuff on there. But again, at the end of the day, I think in however we can do it to kind of build out, starting from the Bitcoiners themselves, ways to meet our daily needs just using Bitcoin. Like I've been basically living on a Bitcoin standard since 2020 now. 90-something% of my income is all Bitcoin. And I use it, like I by default don't have dollars beyond like exactly what needs to come out of a bank account each month for some specific payments that I can't do externally.
So what is your reaction when people say that Bitcoin isn't money?
It's bullshit. I mean, like, you can say that, but I'm still living on Bitcoin right now. So yeah. You can say it, but you're fucking wrong. I don't know. It's puzzling when somebody says that to me, because my entire life is a refutation of that statement.
Yeah. That's a clip right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree. No, I love it. That's fantastic. And I mean, from my perspective, I had no idea any of this stuff existed. I literally got into Bitcoin as I was leaving Canada. And I haven't been back to Calgary in 3 years now. And so I'm super looking forward to next summer. I'll make it to your Sats Market and the Bitcoin Rodeo and everything. So can you tell us a little bit about the Sats Market thing?
Yeah, so I guess I kind of went off the rails when I was about to dive into that, but that knee jerk of me getting angry that people weren't doing anything about it, that spurred me into doing the first Sats Market. And so I was like, guys, the only way around this is to just start using Bitcoin. And so I put out the word online and said, like, let's do this in 3 weeks. Let's do a market. And we got 35 merchants together in that period of time, put on a big, like a Christmas market. And it was great. I was surprised how many people got together and made that happen. And so now we've done three of them. We did a spring one as kind of like a dry run to prep for the Bitcoin Rodeo one that we did in July. But now I think we're going to do two per year. And then so that it's kind of more of an event, but then we want to actually form relationships with each other so that, you know, you don't need the market to get the things that you want. So like, you know, my kid shoved something in the toilet. I called the Bitcoin plumber and he came and I paid him in sats for sorting out my shitcoin problem. I think a big part of the market was, yes, it's great having, you know, like Bitcoin related merch and goodies and stuff like that. But like it shouldn't be all that. It needs to be stuff that people actually need. So we have local farmers come in. And you know, they've got beef and eggs and chickens and all that. We have a lot of tradesmen, like roofers, people doing flooring, people doing all kinds of different stuff. You know, we even have like backcountry camping tour guides. We've got a guy who one of the services he's offering is teaching people how to homestead. So like there's a wide variety. There's a children's author. There's a whole bunch of different stuff. And it's a very eclectic mix of a lot of different things. But also like the useful, like, oh, I need food, you know, I need my haircut.
So do you expect, I mean, if you look up government overreach during the early 2020s in the dictionary, you get a picture of a Castro's bastard doing
that. Yes. Yeah.
So do you expect some kind of clampdown or like problems with this from the government side in Canada?
Well, the nice thing about it is that it's the hardest thing to prevent when I know the guy I get my eggs from.
Yeah.
When, you know, what are you going to say? You guys can't be friends anymore. Go fuck yourself. Like if like if I happen to go visit my buddy at his house and he happens to give me some eggs and I happen to slip and scan a QR code, then like, who's to stop that?
No. Exactly. That was sort of where I hope the answer would go.
Yeah.
Because yeah.
Well, and I mean some calibration on this as well. I think for people who aren't familiar with how Canada is, basically Alberta and Calgary is like the heart of freedom country in Canada. Quebec is also a little bit. It's got its own flavor of that essentially, but Alberta has been going through some really interesting times in the last decade.
Yeah. It's very different from the U.S. in that the individual states have so much more, you know, free reign to kind of set things how they like, and then you can freely move around between states. But in Canada, the federal government has a lot more power over each individual province than I would like. But Alberta, as of late, has been really pushing back against federal overreach, in particular and around energy, in around health, in and around education. And so there's been all of these things that have kind of culminated in we created the Alberta Sovereignty Act, which gives us a conduit to any time the federal government tries to do something where they're stepping out of their wheelhouse, we basically can now refer to that and flip them the bird and say, tough. We saw the province next to us Saskatchewan, when they tried to impose a carbon tax, the entire province, the government just said, we're not collecting it. Go fuck yourselves.
And oh, great.
So like, you're starting to see, and it's very interesting because The Sovereign Individual, the book, when they were discussing the idea of local governance and like the breakdown of larger nation states, when they were talking about Canada, it was written in the 90s when Quebec was voting whether it wanted to remain part of Canada. And so one would have assumed at the time they would have said Quebec will be the first to separate from Canada. But they said, no, it's more likely to be Alberta because it's so energy heavy and we get kind of screwed by the rest of Canada. So there's what's known as equalization payments. And so, you know, if we produce and have a lot of industry, rather than using that as a mechanism to incentivize people to move away from areas where industry may not justify so many people living towards where the good jobs and the resources are, instead they just say, oh, you guys are doing pretty well, we're going to take however many billions of dollars of that and we're going to pepper it over here. And so when you look at, say, Quebec versus Alberta, I can't remember what, this is very recently in the past few years. There was a year where I think Alberta paid $10 billion in equalization payments and Quebec received 11. And so basically we just gave Quebec all the money, and that's like 40% of their GDP.
Yeah, it's socialism. Yeah. That's how socialism works. And yeah. What was the Margaret Thatcher quote? The problem with socialism is that eventually you'll run out of other people's money.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but I mean, what would have happened if that wasn't in place is there wouldn't be as many jobs in Quebec, and a number of people might have said, oh, there's more jobs over here. We're going to move to where the industry is.
Yeah, the free market, it's natural. It's what happens when you leave things be and let people cooperate and collaborate the way they want.
Yeah. But instead, we're incentivizing people to stay put where it's not as efficient for them to be there.
Well, and I mean, the other thing, not just the equalization, right, is that the energy is literally locked, landlocked in Alberta. And to get the oil to market, it's you have to take it to a coast. That's how this stuff gets sold. And there's just been fights over building pipelines within Canada or into the United States. Barack Obama canceled the Keystone pipeline, the Keystone XL pipeline, the first time. Then Trump reapproved it, and then Biden finally canceled it. And I think they're actually giving up on it now. But even within Canada, that's the problem, is that Quebec, who gets all of this money from Alberta, says they will not let a pipeline through their province.
Yeah, it's there's a section about this in the book.
I put it there.
Yeah, I know. That's why you were on the cover. Partially.
Thanks. No, so anyway, so what is your feeling on just the political situation in general in Alberta and Canada as a whole? In this messed up situation.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't put too much or really any trust in politicians, but you know, you see the political pendulum making it's you know, I feel like it already peaked to one side and it's about to swing back, and there'll be that degree of what seems like normalcy for a while, and then it'll swing too far the other direction again.
Yeah.
And so like it's odd because in the 90s growing up, I felt as if these damn conservatives are gonna censor everything. And, you know, it was always like, oh, we need to take this off TV and off the radio, and we don't want anybody to see this. And in my head, I was always like, well, just don't watch it. Don't listen to it. If you don't like, why are you telling others what they can or can't do or watch? And so I always grew up thinking that's where the pressure is going to come from. But as that political pendulum swung to the left, it doesn't matter who's in power. It's just, what are they censoring?
Yeah.
Right. And so I, you know, I think I leaned left politically speaking early in my life because it was just like a knee jerk against whoever was telling me not to do things. And so I felt like I swung left, and then it got to a point where I was just insufferable, actively trumpeting whatever the leftist politicians would say. And it wasn't until a friend of mine actually said to me, I asked him about the election when Trudeau got elected for the first time, which I voted for.
Same.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. And the thing that opened my eyes to how insane I had gotten was a friend of mine that I would have assumed for like the who he was and kind of his lifestyle and everything like that would have definitely been voting for Trudeau. So I asked him what he thought of the election, and he said, "You made me vote conservative." And I was like, I stepped away from that conversation and took a long, hard look in the mirror and realized like the person that I thought I was helping by voting this way voted the opposite because I was such a loudmouth. And what I ended up doing is I started searching for the exact opposite of what I would have searched for on like YouTube and all that. And it was my first peek into how bad the algorithms get you. And because all of a sudden I was getting served, inside of a couple of weeks, I was getting served the polar opposite end of the spectrum and nothing but that. And like rage bait, like here's why the leftists are like, so it made me realize like there's no winner in that scenario.
No. It's so funny that they use the word pendulum, because that's one of the chapter names from the new book. And we describe exactly that process of left and right, but also how this dynamic happens in smaller communities as well. And the danger we see in the Bitcoin community here is that I've noticed this effect that whenever people discover Bitcoin and realize that the government is lying to them, the lazy thing to do is just to buy the opposite narrative and buy into all the conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. And all mm-hmm. of a sudden, Alex Jones is not a liar, but the
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
So have you noticed that too? And like, do you see, are you worried about the Bitcoin community that we're getting sloppy buying into stuff?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable that people have that reaction, in that we're at that point in time where people are deeply distrustful of every single institution. And I think it's exactly what you're saying, is the knee-jerk reaction is, so everything's a conspiracy or everything's a scam. You know, kudos to the people that are a little bit more nuanced with their thinking. I can fall into that trap too. I think it's also, to go back to one of the other formative moments in Bitcoin for me was, as I first started getting involved, seeing the coverage of Mt. Gox, on the news, because I still knew very, very little about Bitcoin at that point. I had just started learning, but even with, you know, a month or two of reading, I knew that all of the reporting was completely wrong, where they were saying Bitcoin got hacked. And I knew it was just a bad company, lost people's money. But to see every news outlet report it the same and all be wrong, and know that I've done effectively the minimal viable research, and I know that you're incorrect, it made me step back and say, well, God, like, what if other things that I know even less about are being reported incorrectly?
I know exactly what I reacted to the most, like, is, and that still goes on today, that they describe Bitcoin mining mm-hmm. as solving this super complex math
yes.
problem
yeah.
when it's really just guessing a number over and
yeah.
over again. So
yeah.
so it's so
yeah.
it's portrayed as something that absolutely isn't.
Yeah, it's blindly throwing a dart at a dartboard
yeah.
somewhere.
And I had experiences with this earlier on, where, you know, being interviewed for smaller things and just reading the interview afterwards and seeing how much they got wrong. And yeah. this so often
yeah.
everything.
Yeah. 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 Cause I mean, there's people in society that are tasked with trying to distill information and present it in a friendly, public facing manner. And, when you're trying to do that, it's difficult to do that accurately and also in an entertaining way that drives clicks and views and all that kind of stuff. And so I think a lot of people by default just use some of those bad habits and, you know, go for the clicks, I suppose.
Knut, what are you doing over there?
I'm stamping my seed. Everyone tells me I should. It's good for Bitcoin security and whatnot, and that I should go balls deep into Bitcoin security. So I'm stamping.
No, you don't do it like that, Knut. You don't stamp that seed. You stamp your seed phrase.
What?
Your seed phrase.
Oh, so that's what these things are for. All of this stuff that they sent me. Like, I get it now.
That's exactly right, Knut. And you can get everything you need to stamp your seed phrase at stampseed.com. And be sure to check out our limited edition Everything Divided by 21 Million Titanium Seed Plate. And use code INFINITY at checkout for 15% off.
That's fantastic. And it hurts way less.
Well, and how do you feel about an antidote to this in Noster, decentralizing communication?
Yeah, I mean, I think with this, it definitely puts us in the right direction in that, you know, previously the way we've seen dissenting opinions dealt with is just shutting them down. You know, now I still very much think that the entire world is has not yet grappled with the fact that you can instantly communicate with anybody anywhere and get a megaphone to tell the world whatever you think. And people have not been great at learning how to distill information and decide if the information is right and true. We're still as a species not great at that. And I think having absolute censorship resistance puts us towards that, because the only tool you have to fight against bad information is better information. And so people need to stop being babysat and actually be forced into a space where they have to distill information and think critically. And that's a muscle that most people haven't exercised. And even myself, at times just, you know, it's easy to go the lazy way. But I think, yeah, with something like Noster, where, you know, you can say whatever you want. Nobody, you can't remove it afterwards. Nobody can remove it afterwards. It forces hard conversations to be had rather than trying to silence them. So I think it's a slow process, and it's not going to happen anytime soon, but it gets us stepping in the right direction.
I mean, I think communication is the thing that elevates us from barbarism to civilization.
Yes.
Really. Because if you go down to first principles and what this is all about, is like humans have two ways of resolving conflict. And the one is violence and the other is communication. You agree and you argue and you come up with a solution. And the latter is obviously preferable to the former because we don't want violence.
Yeah.
So, and seeing things that way makes everything so much clearer. You realize that, like, I believe that even without the internet, communication would have won out in the long run because it's more efficient than violence. Violence is costly.
Mm-hmm.
And it did sort of, like, there were fewer wars, like in early 90s when the internet wasn't a thing than ever before. So like, and fewer people were killed in wars. So the internet has just sped up the process. And right now you can communicate with anyone in the entire world at an instant. And it's not only text, it's video, like without a lag. And on top of that, you have Bitcoin, which is, no, it's not on top of that. It's part of that because it is communication. What Bitcoin pointed out was that money doesn't have to be anything but communication.
Yeah.
So you get all this. That's why I'm bullish. why I'm so extremely optimistic about it, because it is the cure-all in that sense, because it's so damn powerful. So Ben Sessions, why are you bullish? Why are you bullish?
Why am I bullish? In this moment, I think I'm most bullish because people haven't stopped building, and they're doing so at such a breakneck pace. That, I guess, alluding to earlier in the conversation, how that list of things for me to teach people about is growing faster than I can teach it, and that's a great place to be in, given that when I started, the most common question I got from people hearing, oh, you're doing a Bitcoin tutorial channel, you're going to run out of stuff to do, aren't you? And it's the exact opposite. And so I, when there's that much of a brain drain And there's so many people interested in somehow being involved and contributing and seeing this as the seismic shift that it is. How can you not be bullish about that? I mean, even like, so we started a company a few months ago called Bitcoin Mentor. Again, like the educators, one-on-ones and all that. But we put out the word that we were looking for people that wanted to be Bitcoin educators. We had 350 applicants. Isn't that insane?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Obviously, we couldn't take all 350, but, you know, we built a solid team from the people that were there, and there was some really talented people there. So
can you talk us through what this is? What is the Bitcoin? The Bitcoin Mentors? Is that the name?
Bitcoin Mentor.
Bitcoin Mentor.
Yeah.
Talk us through that. Yeah.
So I have previously for a number of years done private one-on-ones with people, typically, you know, Zoom or whatever, video call. And so those were usually people that had gone to the free tutorials on YouTube, but just they need a little bit of extra hand holding. Maybe like it's either just their confidence in doing it themselves and they just want somebody to kind of walk them through the first time, or maybe they hit a snag and like I didn't cover it as in depth as I should have, or it's just, there's a lot of moving parts. And so I got to the point where I was so busy with these sessions, these one-on-ones, that I wasn't having time to make the tutorials anymore. And, you know, I can't not have that, you know, that's like, it's such an important thing to have, the free resource out there as well. So, I met, my co-founder now, Mike, we just kind of formulated an idea of building a team and so it's basically for anybody that's either like brand new and is just trying to wrap their head around, you know, key management or hardware or whatever, or for the, what I would refer to as the Bitcoin Luddites, the ones that have, and this isn't at all a dig because this happens to everybody, but where you come in, you learn the few things you're comfortable with, and then you stand still for a long time and you begin wondering, like, is my setup still as good as I thought it was when I originally did it? Should I add to it? Should I learn something new? Or I just want to level up and learn some new things because I feel like I haven't done that in a while. We get a lot of people coming in like that, being like, yo, I don't know, I got a ledger like 5 years ago and I set it up and I haven't done anything since. And now I think I want to try a cold card or whatever else, or now I want to run a node, or now I want to, you know, I want to learn again. And so we get a lot of those people coming in the door saying, help walk me through this. And once they've done it once, then, okay, that's a skill they've attained and they can do it themselves without any assistance after that. So, yeah.
Oh, awesome initiative. And I mean, yeah, like obviously there's a need there for people to get involved in this stuff. And I mean, the user experience in Bitcoin is still very much, you have to do the things or else it's not quite going to work. And
yeah.
I mean, do you think it's ever going to be so simple that anyone can just quickly get on to Bitcoin in a self-sovereign way? I don't think that there's ever
it's
going to
always
be.
Always a trade-off.
There's always a trade-off. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Yeah, there's always a trade-off. I think, and it also depends on what our interactions with Bitcoin look like in the future, like in terms of what is the average person's experience using Bitcoin. I would venture to say that their initial interaction with Bitcoin inside of 5 years or less is not going to be on chain. Like people aren't going to be onboarded directly to on chain. They're going to, I think the way that we teach needs to be completely inverted, because the way I used to teach was, okay, let's attack a regular on-chain Bitcoin wallet first. Here's how you set it up. Here's your seed phrase. On-chain transactions work like this, you know, every 10 minutes, all like, here's how the fees work. That was typically the first thing you wrapped your head around. And then you would say, oh, and now there's this thing called Lightning. And this allows you to, you know, for more day-to-day, smaller trend. And so you'd start at the base and you'd build the knowledge to the upper layers. But that's not going to be how people interact with Bitcoin, because economically speaking, that's not going to make sense. They're going to come in from a top layer first with their first few sats.
Yeah, yeah. Custodial lightning.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. But what will be the goal is working your way down through the self-sovereignty stack to hopefully get as close to the base as you can for that person.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be like, oh, I came in through a Fedimint, or I came in through a Cashew Mint, or I came in through a custodial Lightning wallet. You'd be like, okay, great. Transactionally, you now know what you're doing, but let's see if we can give you more control and move that direction.
Yeah. I had a thought about the 350 applicants, because they all want to be Bitcoin mentors.
Yeah.
I think they probably all are, just on a smaller scale.
Like, oh, yeah,
all
for
of
sure.
Those people are teaching their friends and family how to use things.
Yeah.
And that's just...
Yeah, it's already amazing because, yeah, you're right. All of those applicants, yeah, sure, they were vying to be part of a specific group, but nothing precludes them from continuing to be the Bitcoin person and their group of friends that people come to for advice and help. Yeah.
Beautiful. This show is brought to you by the Bitcoin Advisor, your premier destination for professional Bitcoin management.
Yeah, so if you want help with your Bitcoin inheritance planning or anything like that, you can call us or send us a DM, because we're Bitcoin Advisors.
Exactly. They've been serving Bitcoin clients since 2016, and they offer a top-notch Bitcoin concierge service, including collaborative custody and estate planning. We're on the Bitcoin Advisor team ourselves because we believe 100% in what they're doing, and we're happy to tell you more about the Bitcoin Advisor on a call.
So check out thebitcoinadvisor.com or just simply shoot us a DM for some Bitcoin advice. Hey, dear listener, don't forget to like, subscribe, and brush your teeth.
And if you're enjoying the show, the best way you can help us out is spreading the word on your favorite social media platform. Ours is Noster. The show is going Noster first, posting the episodes on Noster one day early. And if you'd like to support the show, the easiest way to do that is to send us a zap on Noster, use a value for value podcasting app to send us a boost, or pick something up from the Bitcoin Infinity store. We appreciate the support.
Yeah, go click like, go click subscribe, and go brush your teeth now.
And so you mentioned a couple of things like Fedimint and Cashew as one example. So like just new stuff that's been coming up. What are you most excited about? That's like projects that like look really exciting to you right now.
I'm very interested in the Fedimint stuff. I think it's really cool. Now again, you got to recognize that it's a trade off, but I tend to look at things from the perspective of what is available to us right now. I recognize that things can change, and maybe you have the ability to have shared, you know, UTXO custody in a way. Like, we don't know what we don't know that doesn't exist and is just an idea right now. But with how Bitcoin works right now and the tools that are available to us, I think Fedimints are a pretty damn good trade-off to enable a number of things that are very attractive. So like instant, peer-to-peer free and perfectly private transactions within a mint, gaining the privacy of the crowd if you spend to another mint. And what I mean by that is maybe you have a mint that has 1,000 people in it and another mint that has 1,000 people in it. When you go to send money to somebody in the other mint, it's a lightning transaction between the two federations, but nobody knows which person in this mint initiated the transaction, and nobody knows which person in that mint received it. So it's just like...
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. So I love that. And there's things like you can do offline payments. There's a lot of really cool things. And in particular, what the Fedi app is doing is something that I think it would be super useful in the context of what we're doing with the SAT market in Calgary. Is if we had, if we had everybody say on like a mint, and within the Fedi app, we could have a community that in that same app with their wallet management, they also see all of the resources needed to use said Bitcoin locally. So maybe it by default, we have built in there the btcmap.org that will center in on Calgary when you tap on it within the app. Maybe it has BitRefill or whatever to get your gift cards. Maybe it has whatever other, because it's like it's like a whole ecosystem in a singular app that you can tailor for your specific community, which is, it's so useful. And I didn't know exactly what it was going to be until I actually physically saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love it.
No, yeah, we still have some questions about it, but we'll talk to Obi one of these, like if tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. Yeah, so we're looking forward to interrogate him about the nooks and crannies about Fedi. But it's very, very promising.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that particular ecosystem is going to make leaps and bounds in the coming years, and it'll be very interesting to see how it's used and how resilient it is.
Yeah.
In the way that they're trying to flesh out that ecosystem, because at this point, anybody can make a mint.
Yeah.
And so, and that's a double-edged sword, because anybody will make a mint, and some will be, they won't all be created equally. Some will rug, for sure. Some will rug pull. But others will likely be done well and stand the test of time, and kind of, it'll be more of a reputation based thing rather than,
That's reputation based is based. I mean, it's, that's what we're, excited about Noster, a lot of the, you know, web of trust things, so that you get all the reputation score is basically you own your social graph and your friends and your connections and your posts and everything. And that's where you get your recommendations from. So I think that ends up, killing woke Disney one day, because there won't be a discrepancy between user scores and critic scores anymore.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much going on.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Fantastic to get your perspective on this, because I mean you're probably one of the people who really actually gets in there and tries the most things in Bitcoin, right? Something like that must be close.
Maybe. I tend to tinker around with pretty much everything that I can get my hands on. There's more people that are starting to be that as well. So, but yeah, if you were to look at my apps on my phone, it's just like a disgusting amount of different Bitcoin wallets and everything. And those are just the ones that I put in a folder. If you just like go through the entire app drawer, it's just, I don't remember when I downloaded this. I'm like,
No, it's funny, but you're clearly bullish on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And what about Canada? What's your feelings on Canada, Alberta as well?
I hope Alberta secedes. I'm very pro smaller and more local governance. I think that you become disconnected from your constituents when you try to govern too many of them all at once. It's very difficult when you have such a large landmass with such a large group of people in very, very different conditions, and trying to say you guys are all going to live by the exact same rules. So I think more local governance is great. I feel like Trudeau will be gone next year. Everybody's sick of him, including his own party. So like, great. But at the same time, I've probably, if I had to guess, I would say that he'll be stubborn enough to run again, and that Polyev will probably win. And he's a Bitcoiner. But at the same time, I don't think that he'll do anything in terms of regulatory that would be super favorable. I think it'll just kind of be status quo.
Status quo.
Yeah. If anything, it'll at least buy some time to build out things that make Bitcoin more resilient in the face of the next tyrant.
Yeah, and I mean, that's my hope as well, because I mean, I've still got all my family in Canada, mm-hmm. tons of friends in Canada. I hope for the best in Canada. I'm the coward sort of and left. But no, it was more of a pull than a push. I mean, as much as things were difficult a few years ago in Alberta, I mean, like, yeah, it was other reasons, but still, of course, close to my heart.
You voted with your feet. Good. You made a freedom footprint. That's what you did.
Well, yeah, right. But awesome to have you and other great people in Calgary and Canada, you know, still bearing the torch and everything. So
yeah, there's a solid group there, and the Calgary, the Alberta, generally, like all the Alberta Bitcoiners, there's something there, and I can't wait to see that blossom into what it seems to be becoming.
Well, sign us up for the Sats market in June, July next year. Because, we'll 100% going to
be there. We need Canute to come stampeding is what you need to do.
Yeah, I can do the stampeding. Yeah. Luke tells me I'll be in Canada around there. Yeah. I don't know where he gets that from, but apparently it's not optional.
Perfect.
Anyway, where do you want to send our listeners? Like btcsessions.com? Is that the thing now?
.ca. I have the Canadian player on there.
All right.
I don't know. Like if somebody's listening or watching this that is unfamiliar and you need to learn anything, just search BTC Sessions on YouTube. You'll find it there. I'm on, obviously, Noster. I'm on X still. You gotta be where the normies are at when you're trying to orange pill and educate, I suppose, too. The Bitcoin Mentor stuff you can check out at bitcoinmentor.io. If you need some more handholding on anything, there's a solid group of educators there.
Absolutely fantastic. And I'm going to look at this camera now. To my friends from Calgary who I've been telling you to go attend the Sats market, get to it, talk to this guy, you won't regret it. And you know who you are. And to everyone else, check out all the things. We'll put everything in the description, the links. Thanks for everything you do. And thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Super.
And go buy the book.
Definitely do that.
FFS. Ben, thanks again.
Cheers.
This has been the Bitcoin Infinity Show. Thanks for listening.